And so to next year. ...2009 will be a mega year for anniversaries, and so will 2010, when the Royal Society of London hits 350. Let's review the list with who better, the President of the Royal Society and Master of Trinity College Cambridge, Lord Rees.
Yes, the Royal Society started in 1660, when people like Christopher Wren, Samuel Pepys and Robert Hooke got together in Gresham College, and we are in 2010 going to be celebrating our 350th anniversary. And we're going to use this as really a pretext to raise the profile of science by having a number of public events. We're, for instance, going to have our summer exhibition not in Carlton House Terrace, where it usually is, but on a bigger scale on a south bank with the Festival Hall. And we hope to have an expanded coverage in the media. We've got a great deal of support from the top brass of the BBC, and we have David Attenborough and Melvyn Bragg involved, and Bill Bryson is editing a volume of collected essays related to the history of science. And also we hope to interest a number of museums and galleries to put a sort of scientific slant on their activities. For instance, the National Portrait Gallery will emphasise portraits of scientists, and other galleries and museums in London and in the regions will take part. We also hope to have wider interactions with our fellow academies around the world, including in Australia, and hope that we can use this as an occasion to raise the profile of science internationally, and also go back to the goal of our original founders, which is that, as Francis Bacon said, use science not just for enlightenment, but for the relief of man's estate, in his quaint words, because science does have a role, obviously, even more now than then, in practical life, and it's crucially important that scientists should be engaged. And academies are a key interface between scientists and government and other organisations.
Before then, of course, 2009 is going to be unbelievably crowded. Darwin of this parish in Cambridge, but also International Year of Astronomy. Now, what's that going to involve?
Well, this is the 400th anniversary of the invention of the telescope, and it's going to be really rather like we had International Year of Physics for the Einstein anniversary, an occasion to have a rather above average number of events around the world to enhance the public interest in astronomy. And of course, as an astronomer, I feel fortunate that I work in a subject that does have wide public interest. There are many amateur groups. There's wide public interest in fundamental questions like our origins, was there a beginning, is the universe infinite, is there life out there, etc. And there are very many people who are amateur astronomers, and even those who aren't amateur astronomers still have a fascination about those big questions. Indeed, I would say that the cosmos is part of our environment. Indeed, it's the most universal part, in that all races through all human history have looked up at the firmament, the vault of heaven, or whatever they've called it, and wondered about it. And so there's one thing we all share. And that's why astronomy is such a wonderful subject for getting through to a wide public and promoting a common culture. And I'm very fortunate to be a professional in this subject, but I derive far less satisfaction if my work was only of interest for a few other specialists. And I think I'm lucky to be a professional astronomer, because I remember giving a talk recently where in the audience there was a dentist who said he was a keen amateur astronomer. And I said he was jolly lucky I was not a keen amateur dentist, because I would lose a lot of friends if I was. So,
Yes. And then yet another anniversary, and that of Cambridge. 800 years, is it?
Well, that's right. Of course, the origins of Cambridge are somewhat lost in the mist of history, but it is deemed to be in 1209 that a group of disaffected scholars from Oxford came over into the Fens and founded this great university. And again, we are using this as an occasion to celebrate, but also to look forward and use this as a way in which we see how Cambridge can become a more international university and how it can build on its strengths. But this will be an occasion to celebrate what we've achieved, but in the words of our Vice-Chancellor, to regard the university, as despite 800 years of history, as being a work in progress, as it were, and seeing how we can enhance what we do and our contribution to the city, the nation and the world.
Highly significant that your Vice-Chancellor is a woman, who is, of course, an animal behaviour specialist, Alison Richard. And I just wonder how many people were shocked when a woman was appointed as VC of this ancient institution.
I don't think so. We had actually had woman VC before at a time when it was a more honorific, more part-time role. So although Cambridge was disgracefully late in giving degrees to women, we are now in a state where about 50% of the students are women. Not yet are 50% of the faculty women, but that's really a reflection of the fact that in the upper levels of all professions, women are still a minority.
Now, Darwin is the double anniversary, and but he was at your old school, was he?
Well, I come from Shrewsbury, and Darwin is the greatest old member of my school, and there are now two very fine statues of him. There's an statue of Darwin as an old man, which has been in the town centre for many decades. But also recently they have produced a rather nice statue of Darwin as a young man at the school. And of course he is someone who not only was a great scientist but a most engaging person who had an admirable and varied and interesting life in contrast to some other great scientists. And so he is a wonderful person to celebrate. And also, of course, Darwin is perhaps the last great scientist whose discovery could be presented in a manner directly accessible to the average person, and indeed in great literature. I don't think that could be done for most modern discoveries, but that makes Darwin's work accessible, but also, of course, to a far greater extent than any other 19th century scientist, the issues he raised are still live issues. They haven't been superseded, as most sciences, by the next stage of development. His works are still read, and the issues he raised have a wider cultural resonance now than ever. And in Cambridge, we'll be having, in July 2009, a big conference in which I'm participating, which will consider Darwin's work in the widest possible cultural and scientific context.
Lord Rees, Professor Martin Rees, Master of Trinity College. And in the Science Show in January, we shall be hearing from one of the most extraordinary Cantabrians in history, someone whose reputation has surged this year, Dr. Joseph Needham of Science and Civilization in China.
It does seem to be the case that while the Chinese didn't really want anything that was produced in Europe, the Europeans did very much want tea, lacquer, silks, porcelain, and all other sorts of characteristic manufactures of China. And consequently, there was this flow of bullion, of silver, and I suppose gold to a certain extent, eastwards, which worried the economists in Europe a very great deal. And as everyone knows, I should think, it was precisely in order to avoid this export of bullion that the Honorable East India Company, so-called, sought for some other commodity which could be exchanged with the Chinese, and they hit upon opium. And that was why the company started pressing opium into China in the early decades of the 19th century, and that was what led to the very violent reaction, strong reaction on the part of the Chinese government, especially, you might say, incarnated in certain extremely uncorrupt and magnificent officials like Lin Zexu, who burnt hundreds of cases of opium on the quays in Canton and did everything he possibly could to try to prevent the drug being imported by the Westerners as drug pushers, which is what they really were at that time. It didn't succeed, of course, and the opium wars were the direct result.
The unmistakable plummy tones of the great Dr. Joseph Needham, who will feature in The Science Show for most of January, along with John Merson and Simon Winchester. Science and Civilization in China, an astonishing history that changed the world and is still changing it. In fact, our science programmes, In Conversation, Occam's Razor and, of course, The Science Show will continue with fresh stuff throughout the summer, thanks to David Fisher, Charlie McCune and Nikki Phillips. And all that remains for me to do is to wish you a jolly Christmas and at the same time bid farewell to those ABC scientific colleagues who for so long were stalwarts in television. David and Liz Pearer, who this year gave you The Land of Parrots, Ian Cumming, Andrew Holland and Greg Swanborough, and Richard Smith of Catalyst, Dione Gilmore from ABC Natural History, who won a coveted AFI Leadership Award last week. Farewell to them all. But next week, The Science Show goes bush. Cue Christmas Carol from God's Own Country. I'm Robin Williams.
We three kings of Orient are, one on a tractor, two in a car, one on a scooter, tooting a hooter, following yonder star. Oh, star of wonder, star of light, star of beauty, she'll be right, star of glory, that's the story, following yonder star.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.